This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you'll get to meet Toby Elkin. Toby's currently a freelance editor and a content consultant for an online social network startup. Yep, we'll get to hear about another social network startup. We're also going to talk about Capricorns and creativity, Flickr and yoga, Tribeca Films and HuffPo, of course, social networking and blogging, and what it's like to live in an immigrant neighborhood. So stay tuned, we'll get Toby on the line. I'd love to hear what you think was the most asinine PR move that someone's done on you in, you know, recorded time. Like, what was the biggest goof?
Well, you know, I don't know about the biggest goof, but I think a lot of times people will pitch things that have run elsewhere like a day or two or three or four
before. Yeah.
And like not owned up to it. And then I have, you know, you have to do the research on it. A lot of times you'll get an email that was meant for someone at another publication.
Oh, yeah.
that happened.
Sure. I bet everybody listening has thought, oh, I've done that in some way, you know.
And that's actually hilarious. It's kind of funny, and then you find out what someone else is doing, and that's always, it's always kind of a fun little moment of camaraderie.
So if I could give you the time to do a story, I'd say to you, Toby, I'm going to pay you $300 an hour, and I want you to take all the time that you need to turn out the best story that's happened this year in our business. What would that story be? What would you write?
That is such an excellent question. That is a very open-ended creative question. And I think sometimes one has to be versus do. And I'm a real doer. And so you have to quiet your mind in order for yourself to just be and sit with your ideas or sit with nothingness so that something will come.
Are you dating anybody or are you looking?
No. I would say, I don't know if I'm looking. I think it just needs to come from the sky. I'm not chasing.
Right.
I'm not a chaser anymore.
Yeah. But you keep your eye out. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Well, I hope that it will happen.
Yeah. Oh, it will happen. It will. There is no doubt that anyone is beautiful and smart as you. It's just a matter of the right guy. Hi, Toby.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. You know, it's funny, you just recently left Media Post. Probably all of our listeners know you from your job as editor-at-large at Media Post Communications. You were the editor of Media and OMA magazines, and you wrote a lot of content for those publications. And as well, I think you handled all the online media for the Online Media Daily and the Just an Online Minute column. You cranked out a ton of work there. Is that why you left?
Well, I did get, tired of the daily grind. But more than that, I think that prior even to Media Post and working at Ad Age and Brand Week and really covering the business of digital marketing and media and advertising, I decided that instead of covering the business, I really wanted to do the business and be immersed in the business and sort of apply some of the learnings and observations that I've had covering this business to really kind of applying that knowledge and being immersed in it in a different type of way. And also want to pursue other types of writing, consumer writing.
Well, so you want to get your hands dirty. Good for you. What area of digital marketing seemed the most interesting to you when you were behind the desk writing about it?
Well, you know, that's really a good question because the field has changed so much. I mean, I remember a few years ago, you couldn't get arrested with, you know, trying to write about Google in 2003, even 2004, and then all of a sudden everything exploded. I really think there's a lot of excitement going on. I think social networking applications, the way that information is shared and the way that it's monetized, the business aspects are still very interesting to me. I think that video and basically web video is going to become de rigueur, and it's really going to be like TV. I really feel that. And I think that there's just so many little things. Everybody is a content producer and creator and distributor, and I think that there's been more seismic shifts in the media landscape, and online has been driving all of it. So in that sense, I think that there have been so many exciting things to cover and observe, and it's interesting now to just stand away from it just a little bit.
Well, before we move on to what you're doing next, I do want to cover some of the ground of what you've been doing for the last, I don't know, how long has it been since you've been doing Ad Age and Media Post? Like,
well,
10 years?
And even before that, I was, I was freelancing for technology publications and also had worked for Brand Week briefly. Several years, probably almost 10 years.
That's what I was thinking. It has to have been about that long.
Yeah, covering the business of marketing and advertising, whether it's in the tech sector, online, it all sort of morphed, but it's been a while.
So what do you think are if there are any, the journalistic peculiarities of the ad trade?
Oh my gosh, that's kind of a loaded question, Susan.
Is it? Good. I'm glad, because that's what I'm supposed to be asking.
Yeah, I don't know that I could tell all the little secrets.
Well, give us just one at least.
What do you mean by peculiarities?
Well, you tell me. What came to your mind that you were just afraid to say to me? Just say it anyway.
Well, I think as in all media and all journalism, what even makes a story? What even becomes a story? It's so much a judgment of the reporter, the editor you talk to,
yeah,
and why they pass on things. It's sometimes incredibly, incredibly arbitrary and capricious, totally subjective, depends on the day, depends how busy someone is. It's incredible. And one of the things that has really, since Media Post was really all about the daily email newsletter, we didn't do dynamic news coverage, but we really had to fill this hungry beast of these newsletters, and it really was all about content, and I think that sometimes you don't, with online, any online journalist, which is all of us now, you're so busy feeding a beast that the analysis and the critical thinking and the ability to question something really just isn't there, because you don't have time to stand away from it. I think I've seen that over time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you were the editors of the print publications, Media and OMA magazines. Do you think there's a place in the world for those now? Were you just doing your job?
No, absolutely no. I think there is a place.
Good.
There's definitely a place for not only print trades, but print magazines, consumer magazines. I mean, this is a debate that we've had endlessly, you know, with my colleagues and my former colleagues and friends. I mean, absolutely. People like to touch and feel and read. They're tactile. It's not just people in the commuter hubs of New York City where you take trains and stuff. Everybody likes to carry along. They carry all their magazines along with them on their trips, air travel. Magazines are always going to be there. In the case of Media Post, it's really interesting. That company, it's a young company. And of course, you know that it was founded by the founder of Adweek magazine,
mm-hmm.
Ken Fadner. And in that case, he was founding an online company, and he needed print magazines to legitimize his brand.
Interesting.
And so it's quite the opposite. The Media and OMA have burnished Media Post brand. They're really nice showpieces, and I was really proud to manage them and to provide editorial leadership. And I can honestly say that over 3 years though, that I did almost every editorial job and some marketing too.
What was your favorite and what was your least favorite editorial and marketing job?
I think that my least favorite was, and it's really an essential component to every editorial publishing organization now, but my least favorite was conference planning and programming.
Hey, that's what I do.
Yeah.
you didn't like that, huh?
You certainly did it. You hit it big time with ad tech. But in terms of putting out daily publications, being a daily columnist, doing monthly magazines, arranging, you know, lining up things, I really, while it's really important, everybody wants editorial guidance for conferencing and conferences, and it's really important. It was really a hard kind of juggling act, and you're also arranging all of these kinds of arrangements when these people are your sources, and you don't want to burn them out.
Yeah.
And so there's that. But my favorite, I think, was, you know, I'm a really curious person. I like to interview people. I like to talk to people. I like to find out what motivates them. And I'm a writer. I do like to write. I like to analyze.
I have to say, I've been very lucky in that you've never turned me down. When I've called you up and said, hey, Toby, I'm doing something new. I'd like to tell you about it. I've had the welcome mat's been out for me with you. And I think that's probably because I've never brought you things that were not newsworthy. But what I've always been amazed about is that when you interview me, you get so much content out of a very brief conversation.
Huh.
It's like we talk for 5 minutes and you pick up every single thing and you add to it from your background. You're really a good journal, like a journalistic reporter.
Yep. I like the art of the interview.
Yes.
I like the questioning. I like the listening. But also I get so much more than I can possibly use. This is across the board for every reporter. You get so much. You go really deep and then you realize, oh my God, I can only use like 25%, if 15% of it.
Yeah.
And I also respect, you know, the stories that you've brought me. I respect your ventures and your savvy. And I think also I actually, when I see that there's, you know, credibility and legitimacy to what someone's doing, you know, I'm definitely, and also I respect you. So
Thank you, sweetie.
I'm definitely going to have more of an open mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. The track record is an important thing for an editor, to have a track record with people who are in the industry. I have a question for you, too. PR rookie move of the century. You're not currently an editor. You're a freelance editor now, right? And so
yeah.
you get a little more latitude. I'd love to hear what you think was the most asinine PR move that someone's done on you in, you know, recorded time. Like, what was the biggest goof?
Well, you know, I don't know about the biggest goof, but I think a lot of times people will pitch things that have run elsewhere like a day or two or three or four.
Oh, yeah.
And like not owned up to it. And then I have, you know, you have to do the research on it,
yeah.
Which is so unacceptable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are certain things. We know what the pecking order is. And we know that. And that's one of the hardest things about working in trade journalism. And that's one of the reasons why I needed to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to be at the bottom of that pecking order.
Yeah.
And I think that people will resell leftovers, and that's just disrespectful at some point, at some level. And then also, when you get pitches and people absolutely don't know what you even do or what your publication is, it's like, have you done your homework? Have you, you know, read this? See where this fits in?
Yeah.
And as far as stupidity, I really can't think of anything really that stands out. A lot of times you'll get an email that was meant for someone at another publication.
Oh, yeah.
that happens.
Sure. I bet everybody listening has thought, oh, I've done that in some way, you know.
And that's actually hilarious. It's kind of funny. And then you find out what someone else is doing. And that's always, it's always kind of a fun little moment of camaraderie in the office.
What about publicists that you think, or PR professionals or corporations with in-house PR people, that you think are really good? Is there anybody in the industry, when I say that comes to your mind, that you think, yeah, they do an excellent job?
Well, I definitely don't want to call out names on a podcast.
Okay.
I think I probably shouldn't do that.
But okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good people who, I mean, this is always a tricky, sticky wicket. I mean, your relationship with the people who are providing the information. You know, old-fashioned journalism with, you know, shoe leather used to be done where you would uncover the stories and you would have the time, which we don't have. This, you know, some reporters at very elite publications have that time to investigate, but usually, you know, what's happening is you have these relationships that are built up over years with PR people and communications counsel, and it's sort of dribbed and drabbed, and you build something over time, or they basically, it's given to you, and you have to decide what to do with it. But I basically think that it's kind of hit or miss. I mean, there are, you know, a handful of people who I trust, and I wouldn't want to, you know, specify names or anything, but I think that I respect that, you know, they're trying to do their job. They have an agenda. I have an agenda, and they're not always going to meet in the middle.
So if I could give you the time to do a story, I'd say to you, Toby, I'm going to pay you $300 an hour, and I want you to take all the time that you need to turn out the best story that's happened this year in our business. What would that story be? What would you write?
That is such an excellent question. That is a very open-ended creative question. And right now, I probably can't even think through what my response would be. I think it would probably have to do with the nature of speed on the web or creativity, and who's a creative, who's an author, you know, how everybody is now an author, mm-hmm. everybody's a writer,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's a photographer, everybody's a director. So what does that mean for craft and for art, for writing, and that the fact that words are so, and images will become that way too, very perishable. What do you do with all this stuff? You know, what is Flickr, what are they all going to do with all this? What is YouTube going to do with all this ridiculous video? You know, is that for, like, what is that going to be for? Nickelodeon, like, 50 years from now?
Yeah, good. That was a very, very good answer. I would like to know that. And one of the things you keep mentioning is the word creativity. I know that's a very vital part of your personal process. I sense that about you. I'm actually also a big believer in invoking one's native creativity. Like, we're all, humans are incredibly creative animals. What do you do as a personal practice to tap into that native creativity of your own?
Well, that's something that I'm working on. I think that's a work in progress. I think it's really hard. I think that when you're in the service of many masters, even when, you know, whether it's whatever your jobs are, I think that you're in service to other people's ideas. And that's what you have to put your own personal stamp on things. I think that that is something that I'm working on. I think that I do that. I think that I can invoke creativity in the choice of the assignments I choose to work on now. I can do it in terms of writing short stories, which I work on, whether it's taking photographs, whether it's usually some type of art or even some kind of approach to a problem, or, you know, helping someone with a problem or thinking through something. It's all creative thinking and it's all creativity. I think ultimately we all want to put something enduring in the world. So to me, that's like art or writing or visual something. To many people, it's children, something that's going to endure, and whether, you know, and also to what extent, you know, this commercial success is attached to that.
We are going to take a short break to thank my sponsors that I dearly appreciate and love. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your kind of creative explosion. I see a creative explosion happening in Toby Elkin's life. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this note from our sponsor.
Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, Business and Marketing Strategies for Growth of Transformational Practices with Jason McLean, your guide in the 21st century marketplace on personallifemedia.com.
We We're back and we're with Toby Elkin. She's a freelance editor and content consultant for an online social network startup, which of course we're going to talk to her about. You probably know Toby as she was most recently editor-at-large at MediaBoost Communications. And when we left for the break, we were talking about creativity. So Toby, when you and I were prepping for the interview today, you told me that you're loving taking photos, you're enjoying Flickr, you've just started blogging, you're working on some video kind of news releases where you're shooting the video yourself.
Yeah, learning. I have to learn how to do that.
Yeah, you want to learn how to shoot and edit digital video reports. You are doing writing short stories. You're doing consulting for a social network. You're in some massive creativity explosion.
Well, I hope so. I mean, again, it's really hard when you're in the service of other people's ideas,
mm-hmm.
which I feel that, you know, for most of my career, I've really been focused on that stuff. And it's, I think it's really particularly hard. It is for me, I don't know about other people, to really believe in their own, try to cultivate the time and the space, mostly the time for your own ideas to grow. And I think that we're living in such a sped up world. We have so many obligations to people, to our jobs, to outside things that you really, I think it's very hard, especially for women, to put themselves first. And I think, you know, it's always sort of a struggle for that. But yeah, I mean, I think sometimes one has to be versus do. And I'm a real doer. And so you have to quiet your mind in order for yourself to just be and sit with your ideas. Or sit with nothingness so that something will come.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the challenge for many people who are, you know, like me, or, you know, you're busy with yourself, busy in the world. And I think, yeah, I definitely hope that I'm in a creative explosion because, you know, you have to change and evolve, right?
Absolutely. Evolve or die. That's what Darwin says.
You have to challenge yourself.
So yeah. When you left MediaPost, do you have some other freelance opportunities in addition to this consulting work you're doing? Or did you just say, fuck it, I'm leaving because I need some space and this stuff will happen for me?
Well, the social networking gig is a couple of months and it might be longer. And I arranged for that. I did, you know, really try to scope around for other magazine jobs and things like that. And I was at a point where I did not, there weren't any good fits, and it was kind of like, wow, I'm going to have to create my next job.
Good.
Which I believe is going to happen
you
anyway.
You should do that. That's right.
And all I had to do was arrange for this linchpin, and then I also have other freelance, writing that I like to do, journalism. And I think also to arts and entertainment, I've been doing a bit of that for APASAP, which is a younger reader service for 18 to 34-year-olds. And they do tons of video, and they do a lot of they're open to a lot of interesting ideas. Also, a digital magazine called Levard.
What is that, Levard?
Yeah, basically, it is, Levard is a social organization. It's kind of like a creative salon that draws together people from various professions. A lot of them happen to be in, you know, graphic design and writing and art and that kind of thing, but they're in science, they're in technology. And it was basically started as this underground thing where people are alerted to these gatherings, and they're usually parties, but they're also like competitions, like teams of architects will compete to like construct some green project out of cheese. That was a recent one.
Is it moldy cheese?
And you're alerted by text message. So it uses technology. You're alerted by text message to the location of the event, and you'd only get that the day of the event. And so there's always a social aspect to it, and there's always like a challenge aspect to it. And there's also, there have been other events, competitive acting, comedy, fashion, creating fashion apparel out of tin foil, all kinds of they're always creative endeavors, and sometimes they're just informational, like about a graphic artist talking about his approach versus a musician or something like that. And so they have a magazine, a quarterly magazine. It comes out on a PDF, and obviously it's tied into sponsors. There are sponsors for these events, and it has been spearheaded by a boutique digital agency that I know of, and that's how I got involved.
And it's LV.
It's LVHRD, which is sort of short code for Live Hard.
I like it.
LIVEHARD.
Yeah.
And it's LVHRD.org.
Okay.
And you'll see its online presence. It's only in New York right now, but I think that there are discussions about spreading it. There have been karaoke duels. There have been competitive eating. There have been, I just attended a Green Living event where there was a fashion show of eco-friendly fashion.
Oh, that's very hot right now.
Yep.
Do you have any eco-fashion yourself?
No, I don't make clothes. I wear them, and I'm not like a huge fashion plate. I know what I like, and it's pretty basic. It's fun. I think in New York, there's so much experimentation. You get so much inspiration just on the street. And that's why a lot of, you know, designers like to be here.
Well, speaking of New York, you live on the Lower East Side, which was originally an immigrant neighborhood. What is it about the Lower East Side that you like? Where's that immigrant flavor still manifesting? I hate to use that word because it sounds so California, but that's the one that came to mind.
Well, it's totally pervasive. It's pervasive still, even though it's gentrifying something fierce. New York just keeps turning over and over and over every pocket of it. Right now, this neighborhood, it bleeds into Chinatown, Little Italy, Lower East Side, parts of the East Village spill over. It's very much where I live. My pocket of it is very much a lot of families, multi-ethnic, multicultural, lots of Chinese spoken. They're Hispanic, all different kinds of ethnicities, and lots of hipsters. It's all, you know, very much in the vicinity. And I think there's a lot of change going on, a lot of older Orthodox Jews here, Hasidic Jews, and we see in this neighborhood a lot of luxury condos going up, happening very short distance from me. And so, you know, change.
And how would other people describe you? Would they say, she's a nice Jewish girl from the Lower East Side? What would they say?
Oh, I'm not that tribally Jewish, really. I'm like the non-Jew Jew. I spent more time growing up with Catholics than anything. I went to Catholic school because it was the best school. And I totally, you know, sort of assimilate and relate to non-Jews, actually, you know, and more profoundly in some ways. How they describe me, I really don't know. Probably pretty intense, that I'm very curious. Probably ask too many questions, that very, very engaged with people, curious about the world, curious about people, that I like to experience, you know, new things. I'm pretty adventurous. That I'm overall, you know, I try to be present, you know.
That's
I
nice.
Try to show up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm very, very. You mentioned Capricorn, which I didn't really, I don't know that I said that I was one. I don't know.
Well, it's on your blog profile.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, okay. Capricorn, I think you are very Capricornian. Capricorns are stable and serious, but ambitious with a lot of discipline.
Yeah. I'd like to have a lot less
that.
Discipline.
Right. You have to struggle against that.
No, I'm very, I'd like to, you know, jump off the discipline. Mobile.
Yeah, I did that when I turned 45.
I'm not there yet, but okay.
Well, you've told me you're 251. How old are you really?
I'm 19. I say I'm 96. I'm 96 on my MySpace. I'm 96. Now my grandmother is 96. She's a Capricorn, and she's still, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. But I think, you know, I think that what you're doing with your network is really interesting. It's all about empowerment and reinvention, and nobody is tired of that message. I mean, people want to hear that message.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that movement, that book, The Secret.
Yeah, I know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's sort of a reinterpretation of what we kind of already know from so many other types of self-help literature, and Chopra and all of the other authors, but listen, if it can be packaged, promoted, and marketed in a really easy, accessible, palatable form,
yeah,
I think it's fine. People need to hear that this is not all there is.
Right.
You know, and that they can make some change. It's very, I think, you know, everybody is looking for to make a positive impact and to change. And I think that it hits things that hit the cultural zeitgeist. And of course, it didn't hurt to be on Oprah.
I'd love to be on Oprah. How about you?
I don't really have any. I don't know that I have anything worth talking about on Oprah.
Oh, God, I do.
If I have a book or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I would be on Oprah. If I was in a movie or if I was making a film or something,
mm-hmm.
then I would say, yeah. Or if I was part of a team of people doing something very worthy for humankind. But right now, I think, you know, I have to work my way onto her. But I think you could be on Oprah.
I'm ready to go. Hook me up, Toby.
Well, so, get to her booker.
I should. So you have talked in this interview about how hard it is to be versus do. You've mentioned to me that you're taking yoga. I'm hearing a bit of the California happening in my nice New Yorker friend. What's your favorite yoga move? What's your posture?
Well, I'm not really very good at it. I'm mm-hmm. just taking the classes that are at the gym right now.
Good for you.
Until I decide that I can really commit to a real studio kind of thing. I don't know. I like basic things like sun salutation.
You know, I have a
downward
funny...
Downward facing dog.
Downward dog. I have a funny story. I asked David Herscott. He's the president of MEA Digital out in San Diego, and I interviewed him. He's a lovely, lovely man. And he does yoga. He's big into surfing and yoga. He's a gorgeous, tall, handsome California boy. I just eat him up. And I asked him what his favorite yoga pose was, and he told me Shavasana.
Oh.
And I was like, David, that's the one where you just lie down at the end, isn't it?
Yeah. How about child pose?
And he said, I like the one where you lie down at the end. He said, it's more than it looks like because you're supposed to be integrating all you learned. And I was like, get out. You're just lying down at the end. I can understand why that's your favorite yoga posture.
How about child pose?
I like that too.
But I think, California, I always like to, I love coming to visit. And as for staying, I'd need a damn good reason to stay. It's a big, I love coming there, though. I really do. I love the area.
So now,
where you are.
What's happening in the dating scene? You're single, right?
Yeah.
Now,
oh, God.
Are you divorced?
Public consumption? This is a little too out there.
Oh, no.
Thank God I'm not still at Media Post, right? yes, I'm a free agent in all aspects.
Now, have you been married before?
No.
So you are waiting?
Are.
I'm very happily married. About 15 years into our marriage, we crashed and burned. And it was horrible. We're like, ugh. And then I went to all these marriage intimacy transformation things with my husband. And that's what got me into the whole personal life media
mm-hmm.
deal. It was like, wow, these people are incredible. So,
well, you have to be doing, you know, it's applicable to you and to everyone.
Everyone. Right. Yeah. But so now are you dating anybody or are you looking?
No, I would say, I don't know if I'm looking. I think it just needs to like come from the sky. I'm not chasing.
Right.
I'm not a chaser anymore.
Yeah. But you keep your eye out. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Well, I hope that it will happen.
Yeah. Oh, it will happen. It will. There is no doubt that anyone is beautiful and smart as you. It's just a matter of
a commercial?
The right guy. No, not at all, dear. Not at all. You really have so much happening. So I think it's just waiting for the right guy.
So it's ironic that I'm working to help cultivate content for a divorce.
Right.
Social networking community.
I love how you changed the subject, and I'm going to allow it.
you can change it back. It's your show.
That's true. That was it. No, but I do want to talk about that, and we don't have much time left, so let's go there. Let's just go right there. But I'm going to post that beautiful picture of you on the Dishy Mix blog. So if anyone's listening who has been as captivated by you as I am, maybe they'll look you up.
That's a self-portrait.
It's really pretty. I like it.
Yeah,
I like that's the one I'm going to put up. You're very soft and beautiful there. First Wives World. This is your social network. Tell
us
about it.
Well, we're it's a work in progress.
Okay.
I have been contracted by the producers of a new Broadway show that's going to come to Broadway. The projected time frame is September 2008.
Mm-hmm.
They have the rights to First Wives Club, the book by Olivia Goldsmith, and the movie. And they are producing a show, a Broadway show, which will be very high profile. And one of the major elements of this enterprise, in addition to, you know, them building the musical, which is going to be scored by Holland Dozier Holland, who they are famous for all the Motown hits and for being behind the Supremes and writing all those wonderful songs. They are building a community, an online community, for divorced women in all various stages, whether you're thinking about it, whether you're 2 years out of it, and the effects, you know, if you have children, you're basically divorced for a very long time. You have to go through the children's marriages and everything. It's going to be a community that exists online. It's going to have web video and online bloggers and a lot of offline tentacles. And it will live on. It's not just for the purposes of marketing the show. It's going to be a vibrant community that will that is designed to live on beyond that.
It sounds like a lot of fun. I think that it's really smart to have a community around that issue because have you seen, I like this new website, Spire, S-P-I-R-E.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, check it out when we're done or whenever you get a chance. It's a new social networking site and it sucked me in. Somebody sent me an email, maybe Mark Dorff or somebody. Hey, check this out. You know, it's a way you can get in early and, you know, see this before it goes live. I'm not sure if it's live or not. I don't even know if they've launched yet. But I went into it and like 45 minutes later, I reemerged into my life. It was people asking other people for personal help. It was like Yahoo Answers applied to things like, I have to go to Beijing in August and I'm thinking about taking my kids, they're 7 and 10. Should I do it? It's like, oh yeah, you know, then I answered, of course, and here's what you should do. This is those are great ages. You can take your kids to Beijing. There's plenty of great food and these things to do, and you gotta climb the Great Wall and, you know, go for it. You know, there's so many people asking for vertical information that other people can provide to them, and especially around divorce. Wow, what a great application.
Right. Well, you know, legal, financial, there's all of this, yes, these content areas.
Well,
that,
and there's so many different ways, there's so many courses of action a person can take, and it's so highly individualized,
yep,
based on your morals and your situation, that it's really actually nice to hear 10 different women who've solved a single question in 10 entirely different ways. And so I think having it move from expert to practitioners, individual practitioners, people who have just had an experience being able to relate to each other, it's such a powerful application for beyond social networks, just connection.
Right. Yeah, right. And people wanting to share relate experiences, be mentors to one another, help each other out in, you know, there's a lot of potential, and there's certainly a lot of offline potential for people to get support. And, you know, interestingly, the subject of divorce, I mean, it's just always, always there. I mean, mm-hmm. There are more divorces, what, there are 40 million divorced women in the U.S., and you know, half of all marriages end in divorce, mm-hmm. and it's not just, you know, the women that are profoundly affected, but I know that USA Network is premiering The Starter Wife on May 31st. That's sort of a, you know, a pop culture item. I don't know if you know that book.
What is that? Is The First Wife The Starter Wife?
The Starter Wife it's a book. It's a 6-episode series starring Deborah Messing and Joe Mantegna, and it's going to start on May 31st on USA Network. The book was written by Gigi Lavangi Grazier, who is the wife of the Uber producer in Hollywood, Brian Grazier.
Oh, right, right, right.
She has been up close and, you know, right in front of the sort of battle lines of all kinds of high-profile Hollywood divorces. And so she wrote this book, you know, it's sort of a beach read, but she wrote this book. I think it was a bestseller. And they made this mini TV event out of it. And a star. Starter Wife is, the story is about, it tells the story of the character who's played by Deborah Messing, where she's basically 41 or so, and she's kicked to the curb for a younger edition, of course. She's got a child, one child at least, I think. And it's about how in that culture of that sort of very elite L.A. culture, how she's sort of expelled from her groups of friends, the friends that they had together. And there's a social stratification that occurs. And kind of it's about her journey, you know, sort of from Brentwood to, you know, finding her own sense of self and empowerment. And she ends up at a friend's beach home in Malibu, which there could be worse places. And she, the friend is played by Judy Davis. But anyway, you know, it's sort of divorce in popular culture.
You know, it's funny. You've never been married, and I am married, and I do not want to get divorced. And here we are talking about divorce.
I know.
Divorce is like cancer to me. I don't like to read about it. I don't like to think about it. If it happens to me, I'll Google the shit out of it and deal with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't even like to read it.
It's so ironic. It's like the girl who's never been married is there, you know, doing divorce content. But you know what? I mean, it doesn't really matter. I think that people are coming from all different points of view working on this venture with me.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're all totally, you know, we're all coming at different things. I mean, I'm working with a branding agency who the person, the principal, has been divorced twice. I mean, that helps inform things. So, you know, everybody brings a little something. It's like, well, what is someone looking for?
Yeah.
They're looking for basic information. They're looking for solace. They're looking for basic information, legal information. They're looking for how to get a mortgage. They're looking for how to deal with the emotional problems of children. There's just so many factors to it, and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of, you know, it's just another kind of life stage.
Well, and it's probably a nice break for you from search engine marketing and email marketing and rich media and blah, blah, blah.
You said it, not me.
Yeah.
I'm still doing some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but,
well, you're good at it.
Great.
You
it's
should
nice
do
break.
It. It pays the bills. All right. So my last question, we're going to wrap up here, but I would love for you to ask our listeners for anything that we can do for you. You are now a freelancer. If there's a particular job you'd love to have or something you'd like to do, ask us.
That's a great question. Well, I think my next job, I'll probably create it, but I'll probably try to create something. But yeah, I just, in general, I'm moving into the consumer media space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of my little journalistic dream jobs would be to be like Terry Gross on NPR and interview all the arts and entertainment people, that kind of thing. Or, you know, the Charlie Rose Roundtable.
Yeah.
He gets all the important thinkers and the movers and the shakers. I think that would be awesome.
It sounds like you're interested in moving into entertainment. So
maybe
anybody out there who's listening to Dishy Mix who has connections in the entertainment industry for a fabulous writer, call Toby. How's that?
That's good.
Well, we wish you all the best. We can't wait to see First Wives World. We can't wait to see your name in print all over the place. And we'll have you back in 6 months to a year when you have all this new stuff going on, and we'll find out what's up with you. How does that sound?
Great.
That sounds great to me too, Toby. Thank you so much for being
Thank
on
you.
Today. It was my pleasure. I am your host, Susan Bratton, and I will see you next week. Have a great day today.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.